Good morning and welcome. It is the fourth and final hour of our get-together. We call it the 9 o'clock stretch. So let's stretch it out. That feels better. Ow! Cramp!
Wow. Don't do that, Bob.
907. Time check brought to you by Hayes Jewelers, where the answer is always yes. The separation between the two candidates in Michigan, Abdul Al-Sayed and Haley Stevens. This is on the Democratic side, their primary. They are within about 13,000 overall votes, less than a percentage point apart. And we'll see what happens. You know, the third candidate that never gets mentioned is Mallory McMorrow, also as a Democrat. And Mallory received about 4% of the vote, which doesn't seem like much, but it's triple, almost four times the amount that separates the other two candidates. Wonder who tossed her into the mix. All right. So you've got that going on. We'll continue to follow that. But right now, we want to talk to our Florida Ag Commissioner, Wilton Simpson. Good morning, Commish. How you doing?
Good morning, Bob. I'm doing great.
It is always good to hear from you. And I know you've got more, you know, good information to share, positive stories, because that family land project that you really, I mean, have developed and made huge. I guess you did. You got a couple more land projects done, right?
We did. Just yesterday, we announced a couple parcels, and one in Levy and one in Putnam County. Another, well, between them all, about 1,600-1,700 acres. And what this project does, the rural and family land, so you can look it up on the department website if anyone's interested. We open it up once a year. People submit their applications, and then we rank them. And when the legislature gives us money, then we are able to buy those development rights. When we buy the development rights, and what I like to look at here is it's in perpetuity. This is forever. So in my first 4 years now, once we're finished spending this year's money, we will be well over 250,000 acres of land, farmland, that's been preserved in perpetuity. And this year, we were blessed. The legislature gave us $425 million, which is a record for this program. And so we're very proud of the accomplishment, but it's an amazing part of the wildlife corridor. I'm saving that wildlife corridor, which is 18 million acres throughout the state. And it's something I was very proud to be a part of as Senate President a few years ago, getting that established. And now that we have it established, we've saved a little over 10 million acres of it. We obviously have about 7.5 million acres to go. So I believe the best way to do that is rural and family lands. And yesterday we were able to put these projects on the list of saved. And so we keep chipping away at it.
I think it's a wonderful. I think it's a win-win. People are concerned about growth in Florida. This will make sure that these farm lands and the rural lands and those lands will never be developed. And I think that's huge. I'd like to see the program go nationwide at some point. Perhaps that'll happen, right?
Well, no, absolutely. I just met with the commissioners of agriculture from several of them from the southeast, Louisiana, Georgia, and actually Iowa. And Georgia has a program like this now. They started it, and he's Tyler Harper is a good man, Commissioner of Agriculture there in Georgia. And he said that. He said, we modeled it after the Florida program. And now his legislature is not very familiar with the program yet, but they gave him a few $X million this year to get started. So he's getting the mechanisms in place to get going. But Georgia is looking, and many other states are looking at it, but Georgia's actually now has a program. And so Tyler, with his, leadership, he'll be able to probably hopefully push that program forward. Just to the north of us, we need that continuous wildlife corridor throughout, well, I would say the southeast for us, but throughout the country. And Tyler will do a good job getting that program going.
Where do we stand with Farmers Feeding Florida, that program?
Yeah, this is something that really warms the heart, Bob. But, you know, 2 years ago, we started that program, and the idea was to get food that in most cases would go to waste or go for a severe loss to our farming community and put that into the hands of our food banks, distributing it throughout the state of Florida. And last year, it was a temporary program, a one-year program, and we received $28 million to buy food with. We've in the first 9 months of the program, and I just don't have the updated full year program yet, but in the first 9 months, we were well over 43 million pounds of food recovered, fresh fruit, fresh from Florida food that was then distributed through our food banks throughout the state. So we're taking that food that in a lot of cases would have went to waste, and we're distributing it through our most vulnerable. In this year's farm bill that we just passed a few months ago, we made that a permanent program, and the legislature gave us $35 million this year. So we're probably going to be somewhere around 80 million pounds of food distributed this year, starting July the 1st in that program. And again, this is taking food that in a lot of cases would have went to waste. And I always love to give an example for our dairy farmers. So in Florida, our dairy farmers, or in most states, right, your K-12 system is out of school about 4 months of the year if you add up the summer and all the other holidays, Christmas, Thanksgiving, and so on. During those 4 months, where do they go with the milk that they would produce during that time? And in Florida, you either dump it or you ship it to Wisconsin at a great expense and then sell it for a fraction of the price to go into cheese products and things of that nature. So your choices are, can you get more than it costs to ship it to go to Wisconsin, or do you just dump it? And now we can step in and buy that milk at that moment in time and distribute it through our food banks. We're also doing beef. We're well over 700,000 servings of beef that we've given our families throughout the state that are going to our food banks. Aquaculture's participated, peanuts, eggs, and of course vegetables. And so we're very, very proud of the diversity of that program and that fresh products that we're bringing to those families. And I always say this is not a 1 and 1 equals 2. It's a 1 and 1 equals about 4.
All right,
we're helping our farmers and our, I'm sorry, Bob, but I get excited about that program. It's helping our farmers and helping our most vulnerable population.
I just need a quick one on the pasture mealy bug. What's the latest on that?
Yes, sir. Well, about 3 months ago, we discovered we have it in Florida. They've had it in other states for a few years now, Louisiana in particular. It's a bug that eats our grasses. It kills them, vegetables and things. We're working very hard with the University of Florida and IFAS to get our hands around this thing. And we're making progress, but it's something we have to be aware of.
Thank you very much. We always appreciate the information, especially a lot of the positive stuff you're doing. Florida Ag Commissioner Wilton Simpson, take care, my friend.
Thanks for having me.
Oh, our pleasure. 9:14 on the Bob Rose Show. Coming up next, we're going to talk to Congressman Byron Donalds, who's also a gubernatorial candidate here in the Sunshine State, next on 97.3 The Sky. Good morning and welcome. 9:18 on the Bob Rose Show. Greg Cassidy is here as well. And it is neck and neck right now in the state of Michigan in that Democrat primary. We'll give you the latest numbers coming up in a few minutes. But right now, we want to connect with Congressman Byron Donalds, who's also, of course, a gubernatorial candidate here in the Sunshine State. Congressman, good morning. How you doing?
Good morning. How's it going?
Fantastic, and it's always a pleasure to talk to you. The latest, you've been working with Senator Rick Scott on some state wildlife efforts. Tell me how that's going.
Well, look, we're always trying to make sure that we protect the wildlife of Florida. I mean, it's critical, just like our water, just like our agriculture lands and so many parts of our state. And so, the former governor, current Senator Rick Scott, and I, we just want to make sure that on Capitol Hill that those wildlife areas are protected.
Yeah, I think we all agree on that. We just had the Florida Ag Commissioner on talking about rural and family lands and setting those aside. It's a great program, and looks like it could go national before too long. But let's move on. The elephant in the room is the big deal about data centers. I know as people get more information, I think some opinions are evolving for the better, I think, as we get more accurate information. The question for you is, will we have all the safeguards in place here in the state of Florida before there's more construction? In other words, dealing with the closed system water and the power concerns. Do you think we'll have those in place?
Yes, we will. And first of all, let's make sure we're clear. Governor DeSantis has just signed this into law. It is now state law in Florida that your utility bills will not go up because of a hyperscale data center. That is now state law. Number two, any hyperscale data center would have to get a consumptive use permit from the water management district. That way we would have controls on the amount of water that is used. What I want to see is something that we can easily accomplish is requiring them to have a closed loop filtration system. You just mentioned that, or to have the system air cooled where it doesn't use water at all. The other piece is have proximity. Like, nobody wants it next to their house. I don't want it next to mine. So let's just make sure that they're away from residential neighborhoods. And I think those are all common sense solutions that people agree, no matter what part of the state that you're in, people agree to that. And I believe as long as we have those parameters in place, many of them are in place today. The proximity piece we're going to work on next year as governor. We want to make sure that they're away from residential areas and work with local governments, because at the end of the day, local governments are going to permit construction of these hyperscale data centers. We want to make sure that Floridians are protected and their resources are protected.
So when you say the proximity, you're talking also about the noise factor, I assume.
Yes. I mean, look, nobody wants to hear fans going on right all the time. And that's just what that is. So as long as you keep it away from residential neighborhoods, just distance solves that.
Coming down to the wire now, we see and hear more ads back and forth, some mudslinging stuff going on. What are your thoughts moving forward as before the midterms? You know, you've got to win the Republican ticket. So what are your thoughts?
Well, we're at that point in the campaign where people are just, you know, throwing stuff all against. Frankly, they're all attacking me. The truth is that these other campaigns are way behind in the polls. They've known it for a very long time, so they're desperate and they're slinging mud. We're focused on the people of Florida, the insurance reforms that are needed in our state to push insurance costs down. I want to see the property tax amendment pass, but if it doesn't, we're going to bring that back during the Tax and Budget Reform Commission next year with a goal of eliminating homestead property taxes. And if we can't get there, if we can't make that money work, then we want to have seniors on fixed income and working families have real relief. It's also about planning and managing the future growth of our state. We need balance between protecting the ag lands and the conservation areas, which are critical to Florida, with how we make building single-family homes more efficient and cheaper for young families to be able to get in the game in home ownership. And we're going to continue to expand Florida's economy. People want to be a part of the fabric of our state because we're a common-sense conservative state, and that's not going to change. We're going to continue to be a common-sense conservative state that supports a law and order, supports our men and women in blue, our sheriff's departments, and our emergency personnel. So I don't really get into the mudslinging. I let other campaigns do that, and that just demonstrates the level of desperation, because all they really can do is attack me. But we've been well ahead in the polls for a very long time. President Trump just came out and endorsed me again to be the next governor of Florida. Very grateful to have President Trump's endorsement and the endorsement and support of so many officials and sheriffs up and down the state of Florida. We're really in prime position to win, but it's all about the voters. I am asking for your vote. Please make sure you get out and vote on August 18th for me to win the Republican nomination for governor.
When it comes to the property taxes, if they go away via ballot or diminish greatly, or you work through, Tallahassee gets it done one way or another, can you make a promise that no matter which way it goes and what happens, that our folks, our first responders and public safety, that they're going to be taken care of and then they're not going to be gutted? Because some of these counties, obviously, they have difficulty affording a lot of these things on their own. As governor, can you guarantee these folks are going to be taken care of?
Absolutely. The fiscally constrained counties, what I want to see is a funding formula. If the amendment passes, we'll do a funding formula in Tallahassee. That way, those fiscally constrained counties can get the resources they need. And I don't want them hiring lobbyists to come to Tallahassee. And I don't think it's right for me or anybody else to pick and choose how much money they get every single year. Let's set up a funding formula that respects their autonomy as local county government, and make sure that they get the resources they need. That way they can plan for their budgets into the future.
I know your wife happens to be heavily involved in education. You know, what is your take on public education moving forward? Like the challenges, one district, Marion County, they have like a 30% rate of kids that are absentees. That's huge. Is there anything you could do, you know, on the state level as governor that would help to alleviate this problem?
Well, the first thing, when it comes to education, I believe in universal choice. I want parents to be making the decision about where to send their kids to school. I don't want the state to be telling a parent where they want to take their child. This is one of the reasons where I fully supported Governor DeSantis' universal school choice initiatives. When I was in the legislature, I voted for the first expansion of the family empowerment scholarships. I fully support the program. That's going to continue in our state because parents deserve to be at the head of the table, not government and not bureaucrats. I think if you're talking about truancy, that's something where we want to sit down and look at the truancy efforts in these counties. Are some of these counties doing what's necessary to make sure kids are in the classroom? I do think that's important. But the last piece is, you know, if we're looking at truancy, we also got to look at what's a kid getting out of the academic experience in K-12. Do we have our kids on multiple pathways to success, or are we just trying to make it so that they all have to go to the University of Florida or Florida State or one of the universities to be successful? And I think today it's about a kid being able to, yes, go to the university system if that's what they want to do. But if they just want to go into the working world, let's make sure they get apprenticeships and internships while they're in high school. So that way they get not just an education, but they get the skills they need to be ready for the future. And I think that if you had multiple pathways for success, which is what we are going to do as governor, then I think that takes down your truancy level because the kid is like, man, I know I'm going to school because I'm getting this, as opposed to I'm just going to school just because I'm going to school. And we want our young people to be highly educated, but you also want them to have a pathway for their personal success so they can build the Florida dream in their life.
Now, to get people educated in the trades, would that require, you know, tax dollars to go toward developing that kind of a program?
Actually, what we want to do is use the tax credit model, which is how we used to fund school choice in our state, was using the tax credit system. And we want to use that model to incentivize businesses to create their own training programs. Look, in the world today, our kids in high school, they're on their phones ordering DoorDash, having it dropped off at our schools. That's happening today.
Wow.
So they're ordering food and bringing it in. Talk to any teenager, they'll tell you. So what we can do very easily is use technology to find a company that's maybe it's a welding company, a HVAC company, auto techs, working at a local car dealership, learning the skills to be an auto technician. By the way, auto technicians coming out of high school now are making $80,000 a year to start. That's what they're making. So let's actually have that kid be partnered with that business. As opposed to what we're doing right now is we just do it within a school district's confines, and the school districts aren't in that business. They don't do this stuff. These businesses do is let's have the kids actually go to these companies, get an education in the field, get an apprenticeship, get an internship.
Congressman Byron Donalds, gubernatorial candidate for the Sunshine State. We covered a lot of territory, and I appreciate your time and hope to hear from you again soon.
Absolutely. Take it easy.
All right. Thank you. It is 9:28 on the Bob Rose Show. Coming up in about 15 minutes, things that make you smile. Start thinking about that. 97.3, The Sky. Good morning and welcome. It's the Bob Rose Show. Greg Cassidy is here. It is 9:34. Coming up in about 10 or 15 minutes, things that make you smile. Looking for some upbeat positive thoughts. Brought to you by my dentist, Dr. Samantha Annis, and our friends at Transformation Dentistry. So, be thinking about that. We're not getting into it just this moment. What's going on in Michigan? Abdul El-Sayed versus Haley Stevens. This is the Democrat primary. This is for a Senate seat that is being vacated by a Democrat. The winner of this will face Mike Rogers, who was a longtime congressman from Michigan and now running for that Senate seat from the Republican side. But these two are going at it, and the Democrats and their PAC groups and all that, they estimate somewhere around $80 million, the most expensive primary ever in history. Right now, $80 million spent on that campaign. That's just in the primary. On the Republican side, Mike Rogers, he really was unopposed for the Republican nomination. So I guess they better get their war chest ready for whoever, you know, the winner is here. And it'll be kind of interesting how they continue to position Haley Stevens as very moderate, very moderate. And I think that that was done by some of the, you know, the Democrat Party entrenched, because they think she has a better chance of beating Mike Rogers, you know, in the midterms. I think that was their thought, and maybe that's why Mallory McMorrow was, you know, in the race, garnering 4% of the vote, because, yeah, you could be an upsetter, a dark horse, not win, but just take as little as 4% and make a difference in an election, especially one that's this tight. We're talking about separation of just less than a point right now. So we'll keep up with that. Big stuff. Also going on in Michigan, because, you know, we spend a lot of time in Michigan, first of all, because these are interesting races, but also because, you know, that really can be such a swing state. Representative John James has won the Republican nomination in the Michigan governor's race over businessman Perry Johnson. James won handily, getting about 49.7% of the vote. Johnson's 35%, so the analyst declared him the victor. He's an Army veteran. He lost two Senate races in Michigan before securing a House seat in 2022, which he won again in 2024. He said, "This is an amazing state with all the great ingredients, but for the past 7.5 years under Gretchen Whitmer, we've been led to higher taxes, more crime on the roads, and frankly, the roads that we have aren't fixed yet. We're going to work together to make sure that our children can read, to make sure that we put criminals in jail, and we hold those accountable who continue to let them back out." And he said, "And we're going to make sure that we come together to accomplish the mission of increasing hope and purpose with tested positive leadership that has actually been tested from the battlefield to business to delivering for you right now." So the stunning victory comes after Johnson reportedly pounded the state with more than $31 million worth of ads. And he drew on his work in quality control, improving business efficiencies while campaigning on a plan to eliminate the state's income tax. Johnson also drew on his personal wealth, self-funding his run while declining political donations. Wow. He only spent a fraction, though, on advertising, about $2.8 million, but you know, as far as the Republicans go, well, things seem to be looking okay. Nobody can take their foot off the pedal. And again, I'm not gonna, you know, keep reiterating, but the midterms are going to be so critically important. Everybody has to show up. You know, you get your feelings hurt, or one candidate or the other doesn't get in like you wanted to. Please don't stay home. That is a victory for frankly, for our enemies. You know, you hate to position it like that, but they really are. The Democrats, look how the Democrats created that hole in that opening that's allowed socialism to creep in. I don't even know if you could call it creeping in. It's come rushing in, right?
They just opened it wide open like the border.
Yeah. Oh, and it's a big tent, they said, and all that. It's like, wait a second. The lefty Democrats were radical enough. And now you want to bring in people who are straightforward, not afraid to say it. Hey, we want to abolish ICE. That's one thing.
Yeah.
But then they talk about abolishing law enforcement, abolishing prisons, abolishing the Senate, packing the Supreme Court. I see that Kamala has glommed onto that whole idea. Kamala's reinventing herself as a socialist. I don't know if you caught that recently, but in some interviews and things where she was on stage, she is singing some of the same tunes that the socialists sing. So she's looking for that to kind of carve her. She's going to try to ride this wave, okay? And now, look, and it is somewhat of a wave, to some extent, but only in really in some areas. But it will be interesting to see how much traction that this socialist agenda really, how much it can really get, especially as more and more people aren't just exposed to the promises of socialism, but actually what socialism delivers and has delivered And you can use history as that tool. And my hope is that, you know, young so-called educated people will get more of a proper education and by opening their own eyes and actually reading the stuff that, you know, the Democrat Socialist Party, what they stand for. And do you believe in your heart of hearts that these are good things? You don't want anybody protecting the border. You want that wide open. You want to abolish ICE. You're basically against law and order. Don't you feel like you would be vulnerable if there are more crime and more criminals on the streets? Don't you have a concern about that? You can live in your little gated communities and mommy and daddy can, you know, let you live in the basement until you save up enough money to buy a big, beautiful house. Yeah, that's all well and fine. But some point, sometime, you're going to be out there on the streets. And if you elect a bunch of Democrat socialists, they're going to be mean streets. You know, President Trump spoke about that recently. He put it into perspective. He said, you know, you look around in the cities that, you know, where there's socialism, the cities that, you know, are run by these kinds of people. He said, they're dirty.
Yeah.
And he said, you know, I'm a clean guy or whatever. Hmm. And he goes, but these cities, they're so dirty. And the way he said it, yes. You feel you're right.
Uh-huh.
I can feel the grime right now on me. Ooh, they are dirty. That is something to consider, you know? You talk about quality of life. Again, as long as these socialists are, you know, in their ivory towers and removed and they live in gated communities, they only go to the, you know, the upper end stores and malls and all that, you know, they can escape, you know, a lot of that. But they help to create it. And that's what socialism does. Instead of everybody sharing in the wealth, everybody shares in the misery. And instead of looking for your piece of the pie, all you do is make the whole pie shrink tremendously. And it's not just me telling you that. It's history telling you that. We've got to get this message out. You know, that's one of my questions. You know, what kind of role can the Republicans play to try to get the message out? Because it is always a challenge to get that message out because the majority of the media is left of center, and they tend to agree with this kind of agenda in many cases. The more radical, the better, I think, is how some of them think. Let's go to the Davis-Gainesville Chevrolet GMC Skylines and talk to Kay. Good morning.
Good morning. You know, it is no longer socialism. This is a big lie. It's like 1619, the black people came. No, they didn't. The pilgrims weren't even here yet. I'm tired of their lies, Bob. This socialism is now communism. There is no doubt about it. They have changed the word so that we will accept it, and nobody is being fooled by it except them. And I am so disturbed about the media doing this. They need to have their license pulled. Donald Trump is right. Pull their license. WSKY, I tell you, is the only radio station that around that did not go off on the woke and the liberals. I am so happy for WSKY staying with us and continuing to be completely conservative and having the Bob Rose Show and Glenn Beck and all the people all day long. It is the best, and I'm so grateful for it. Thank you, Bob.
Well, no, thank you, Kay, and I always appreciate your input, and I will never give away Kay's age, but, you know, she's been around the block. Mm-hmm. She's seen the world, and she's seen it from all different perspectives, and she'll tell you herself. It wasn't like she was, you know, born, you know, a strict, tough conservative. Mm-hmm. She lived a life. She developed all these things over a lifetime, and, you know, somebody like her can remember, like East and West Germany,
yes,
you know, when they put up the wall, when mm-hmm. they were shooting people who were trying to escape East Germany. Why would you put your life on the line to try to escape East Germany? Well, communism, socialism. Yeah, they were trying to escape it. They were forced to stay. What does that tell you about a governmental system that forces its inhabitants to stay and can't leave their borders? I mean, that tells you, it should tell you, all you would need to know about it. Maybe we need to get some folks on that, you know, we're living in East Germany.
Yeah.
And then the walls came down and how their lives changed for the better, just tremendously, literally like night and day, which another example could be, say, North and South Korea. The examples are all around us and in history books. But the young people, I don't know, they're brainwashed. We've got to move along to happier thoughts, like things that make you smile. That's where you call in with upbeat positive thoughts. You share with us, we share with you. It's brought to you by my dentist, Transformation Dentistry, and Dr. Samantha Annis. So call in now, 877-975-9825. Things that make you smile. Next. Hey, even when the news is not always upbeat and positive, you still got count your blessings kind of a thing, right? Good things going on in your personal life. That's what this segment is all about. Welcome. It is 9:50 on the Bob Rose Show. Greg Cassidy is here, and it's time for things that make you smile. Upbeat positive thoughts you share with us and we share with you, and it's brought to you by my dentist, Transformation Dentistry, and Dr. Samantha Annis. So if you would, call in right now at 877-975-9825 and give us something that'll make us smile, huh? Good morning, Mark. What you got that's making you smile?
Morning, guys. Kind of a sad story into a good story. I'm 55 years old. May 7th, my wife up and moved back to St. Louis, divorced me. 238 pounds, basically the end of May. I got out on my bicycles out at Santos. I've gotten 1,200 miles. I'm down to 202 pounds. I lift weights daily. But the good thing about that is you put yourself out there, find the Lord, let him guide you. You can do anything in this time. But anyway, just wanted to say that makes me smile that I've done that much in such a short time. God bless.
Yeah, nice. Instead That's of awesome. Wallowing in a you know, going through a tough time, mm-hmm. you turned it into a positive. You found the silver lining. You said, I'm going to work on me.
Yep.
I'm going to make me better, healthier. Your quality of life's going to go up. You give credit to the good Lord. You're firing on all cylinders, Mark, and you were good enough to share that with us.
That's awesome.
So man. They can motivate the rest of us.
I like that.
Yeah.
Because sometimes the sharing part, that can be the tough part, you know, when you're going through something difficult.
But yeah.
There's something, I think, cathartic about doing that, though. Helps you get through it.
Oh, absolutely. Physically and mentally. I mean, it all works. Body, mind, spirit.
Yep.
Think about
there
it.
There you go.
I got a new wheel cover, spare tire cover for the Jeep. And if you know anything about Jeeps, you know to some of us that kind of important. And there's all kinds of different directions you can go in as far as customizing yep. that. Some people go with some you know, cool brake light kind of thing. Mm-hmm. I thought about that. But in this case, I guess I want to protect, you know, the tire. And it's kind of a cool a Celtic kind of a look.
I would act shocked, but that would be very fake.
So yeah, I'm, you know, slowly doing the little things that people do when they get a Jeep, which, by the way, we've had the Jeep for a while.
Yeah.
But, you know, it was Betsy's Jeep, and I kind of stole it from her, and I gave her my truck instead. Mm-hmm. So I got to put my own touches on it, you know.
I've just been corrected. Cathartic is what I was told it really is.
Cathartic.
I think I said cathartic.
Oh, well, that's cathartic. Better than being lethargic.
Which is probably where that came from in my head.
That means being not lazy and making it feel better. Now I can't remember any of the words.
and don't ask us to spell them either. So.
Yeah. All right. Hey, some of the things might be making you smile. How about that stock market? Doing pretty good. Now, I can't speak for, you know, what might be happening right now. But as of yesterday, man, reaching new highs. And some of that has to do with Rubio coming out and saying we're close to an agreement with Iran. Scott Bessent, the Treasury Secretary, indicated the same thing. Maybe even as soon as later on today. Mm-hmm. The markets reacted to that. So that's a positive. That makes me smile.
You mentioned Rubio, something that made me smile. We see this picture of him kind of slumped in a chair, and that's the one they make all the memes about, and they turn him to whatever character of the day is making headlines. He says he hated that picture. He says because of the way that it's, I think it's in the Oval Office, it like has a soft back and you kind of fall down into it. So he never liked the look of that picture because it kind of made it, it's a kind of a frumpy look, but since they've turned it into all these memes, I think he's changed his mind about it, and it kind of makes him smile.
Yeah, I think that he's doing a fantastic job, and the future's bright for him, I believe, for Marco Rubio, for sure.
Absolutely.
Yeah, Aaron Rodgers called Anthony Fauci an absolute coward, and he has the absolute right to do it because, boy, they gave Aaron Rodgers the hardest time when he wouldn't take the shot, but he stood his ground. Good for him, and that makes me smile. Don't go away. We're not done yet. Coming up next, it is The Smoking Gun, and it's brought to you by Harry Beckwith Guns and Range in Micanopy. Time now for The Smoking Gun, brought to you by Harry Beckwith Guns and Range in Micanopy. WTA World Number 1 Arina Sabalenka, tennis champ, Monday offered her full support of the WTA and their testing using a cheek swab saliva sample to check for the presence of SRY, as in part of the Y chromosome. Yep, and that's a good thing, and she backs it up. And like I say, hey, nothing could get between you and your genes. And that's your Smoking Gun. The Smoking Gun brought to you by Harry Beckwith Guns and Range in Micanopy. For Greg, I'm Bob. See ya.